This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, broadcasting from my home in Maryland. There's a good chance you or someone in your family has recently ordered food online using an app like Grubhub or DoorDash. These apps are big business. According to CNBC, DoorDash alone has seen its sales grow by more than 140% year over year. It's worth billions. But how these apps make their money has now led some cities to place a cap on the cut they take. And there are growing concerns whether restaurants and their workers are being taken for a ride by a digital intermediary that makes a mint for the app and leaves crumbs for those preparing, packing, and delivering our food. Now, your stories in a moment. But first, let's speak to food, retail, and policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal's Chicago Bureau, Heather Haddon. Heather, welcome to 1A.
Hey, thanks so much.
Adam Fry is the co-owner of Ivy and Coney, a restaurant and bar in the Shaw neighborhood in Washington, D.C. He's also the co-founder of Togogo, a new food delivery platform that's based in D.C. Adam, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Miguel Ramirez, he's a food delivery worker for a Thai food restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Miguel, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
I'll start with you, Heather. Help us understand what things look like for food delivery right now. Are people ordering out more than they did before?
Yeah, so people definitely are trying food delivery, some for the first time, some just going to it more often during the pandemic. Some of that third-party data you cited does show that a lot of growth for the private companies like DoorDash and Postmates and Grubhub. They had earnings recently, also did say that they've seen a big increase in April since the pandemic. In March, though, Grubhub, which also owns Seamless, they had actually a big decrease because they are very New York City focused. So, currently, they're having an increase, but back in March, when New York really got hit by the pandemic, there was a real loss for them, which they've had to recover from. So the key question, though, is there's a lot of growth for these companies. They're seeing new orders, and they're seeing restaurants who really need their business for the first time. But for these apps, is it profitable? And that really still remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about that. Now, just a note, we did reach out to Grubhub, Postmates, DoorDash, and Uber Eats to be part of today's show, but they did decline. We also reached out to some drivers to be on the show, but they some of them expressed concern of being targeted by the app that they work for. Now, the relationship between the drivers and the food delivery companies seems a complicated one right now. One delivery driver left us this voicemail.
Hi, this is Ordi. I live in Lebanon. A few months ago, I was basically shoved out of my job in Zionsville, and I've been earning a living as a food delivery driver ever since then. And I kind of wish you guys would ease up on these companies. I mean, bear in mind that when you boycott DoorDash, you're not really hurting the corporate executives. You're hurting ordinary delivery drivers like me.
Thanks for leaving that message, Ordi. Heather, what's your response to that?
So, yeah, it's a tricky relationship. And it was before the pandemic, but particularly now, obviously, these workers are on the front line. I mean, they're very much exposed to the public and putting themselves at some risk when they're out there going to get us our food in the comforts of our own homes. The companies have said that they have stepped up providing PPE for these workers, masks and gloves, and providing them training. But it's still, you know, it's a fraught relationship. They're contractors. They are gig workers. So the companies only do so much for them. And it's also really interesting. It seems, you know, from talking to some workers, they're really seeing a variety of experiences in terms of tips. Some say that customers have been very generous at this time, have been really sympathetic to them doing this hard work right now and tipping them generously, while others really haven't. So it's a mixed bag for these workers.
Adam, you heard that voice message as well, you know, from the delivery driver who says, you know, he's being hurt by this. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I want to echo the thought that it is a pretty fraught relationship, particularly between making sure that from a restaurant standpoint, we can get the food to our customers effectively, make sure that the dining experience is still as similar as it can be to when you were eating in the restaurant. And I don't think that there's anyone, at least not in the restaurant industry, who wants to see a setback with the drivers. It's more the management of the relationship with the third party platform that troubles us, right? We obviously want to make sure that all of the people, just as though they were our servers, the people bringing the food to the customers are taken care of and provided a living wage, just like anyone else deserves.
Mm-hmm. Miguel Ramirez, you're on with us as well. Miguel is a food delivery worker in New York City. Miguel, do you feel more secure working for a restaurant instead of a food delivery company?
I do feel more secure because I have a brother that does a Grubhub or like DoorDash, and mm-hmm. he gets like online with other people waiting for their own food, like trying to order stuff or pick up. And it does feel a little bit more safe. I just like come out of my restaurant and just go ahead and deliver to the place where I need to like deliver. And it does like feel a little bit more safe because you're not online like waiting next to other people, and it feels a little bit more comfortable.
And you've been doing this food delivery for how long?
For about like 3 years, four.
Okay.
Heading four.
So looking at over 3-4 years, I mean, it's got to be very different right now with this pandemic in play. Your job has become so much more important. So tell us, Miguel, what is it like to have people relying on you so much right now, almost like a first responder?
How much is it? It means like a lot, because like some people like just like depend on me, I guess, or like my other coworkers, to like leave their food in a responsible manner, like, and we always like be prepared with gloves, mask, and everything, and that's good that the restaurants are be able to give it us, but sometimes like it doesn't, like we need a little bit more because like it's like a daily basis, and it's gonna continue like that for a while.
You're driving, right, in a vehicle? Are you also delivering on a bike?
Yeah, I'm delivering in an electric scooter.
Oh, okay. So do you not feel more exposed being on a scooter?
Yeah, we definitely do. That's like a little bit more like kind of dangerous, yeah, on a scooter, because some people usually wear a helmet with their little like glass cover type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel a little bit more exposed, and a little bit like we got to be a little cautious about that. And we do like everything.
Yeah, and you mentioned you're wearing masks, you're wearing gloves. Heather, what's the nation's view of all of this? You know, what's the issue here with safety for delivery workers?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a good point, is that there's a lot of tensions that existed on many sides of this industry, both between the restaurants and the third-party apps, also between the apps and the workers. And I think the pandemic has just really heightened this. It has brought some of these tensions to the forefront in a more intense way, because more restaurants are turning to these services. Some of these services are actually picking up more workers at this time. Some of them, maybe are laid off, and other industries are trying this sector for the first time. And the delivery drivers are having to do more, go to more places, follow more rules, make sure they're providing contactless delivery to customers in a way that they feel satisfied with, make sure they have all those gloves and masks, et cetera. And, I think, America's kind of love-hate nature with these apps is really also coming to the forefront. People really love the convenience, but they don't always love the costs, and, they might also feel, maybe a little guilty about forcing a worker to come to their door to provide them convenience right now. So there's a lot of fraught feelings all around.
Mm-hmm. Glenn writes to us on Facebook. Glenn says, it's a valuable service for folks who can't get out or whose health issues keep them out of public places. Sadly, though, driving for these services has gone from a side hustle or income gap filler to a lifeline for folks who have been laid off. Heather, is there a union or any other protection for this type of essential worker?
No, there really isn't. And, just interesting in covering this this sector, there's also not really a trade group for the companies themselves. It is a very competitive sphere here. The big four that you mentioned, Postmates, DoorDash, Uber Eats and Grubhub are really competing with each other. And so they can't even really agree to lobby on issues amongst themselves. And, you know, organizing gig workers, it's something that Uber and Lyft have experienced, given the rideshare workers have also been agitating for more rights for a while. And there really hasn't been much progress in putting together a formal group for these food delivery workers that I know about.
Mm-hmm. Miguel, would you like something like that? A union?
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, it would. Yeah, like, yeah, it would be much better for us and more convenient. Yeah.
And I know we were talking to you before. You were talking, you know, I'm interested in your thoughts on a raise for delivery drivers right now. Do you think that you deserve more money?
Yeah, we definitely like should at least get like a quarter, 50 cents or a dollar would be nice. But like, cause we're the ones risking a little bit more of ourselves. And then, I feel like the people would probably feel the same about for us. And then it's just like, it's kind of benefiting just the owner of the restaurant.
Yeah.
And us, we just kind of having ourselves like risking like each order that we go to. And it's kind of, yeah.
It's a lot. Well, stay safe. Miguel Ramirez is a food delivery worker for a Thai food restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Thanks for being with us. We are talking about how this pandemic has changed food delivery as we know it. Still to come, a lot more of your stories. We'll hear more from food retail and policy reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Chicago Bureau, Heather Haddon, and the co-owner of Ivy and Coney, Adam Fry. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're discussing food delivery in the time of a pandemic with food retail and policy reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Chicago Bureau, Heather Haddon, and the co-owner of Ivy and Coney and co-founder of Togogo, Adam Fry. Now, we'd love to hear from you, too. If you work for a delivery app, what are you dealing with? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Now, we heard from another listener who's a part of the group that works for the app.
Hi, this is Steven from Southeast Missouri, and I've been delivering through apps for about a year now. And I think the biggest issue right now that I have is that while this used to be a sustainable source of income for me, with all of the tens of millions of unemployed people now, trying to use it as a source of income, everybody gets hurt for it. So while people need to be drivers in order to make ends meet, those of us who are previously making ends meet with it can't anymore. It's kind of a stopgap that hurts everybody involved, the restaurants, the old drivers, and the new drivers. Nobody can really make a living on it right now.
Steven, thanks for leaving us that message. Heather, how has the flood of new workers changed things for the drivers who are already working for these apps? Does Stephen have a point?
Yeah, and I also think from the restaurant side, I mean, one of the issues that some of the restaurants have with hiring a third party or making a deal with a third party company to provide their delivery is they can't really control much about the quality of the service. So, you know, it's one thing if you have you're a Domino's and you actually employ the driver, you know the driver, there's some accountability there. There's just less so with the third party apps because you really have no other prior relationship with this driver. And you know, in the past, sometimes delivery drivers would tend to frequent a certain restaurant just because it was on close to their home or in their delivery route. Now that might all be changing because, again, on one end, there could be more drivers coming in. Also, just the dynamics of where drivers are delivering from has really changed. You go back to New York, so many restaurants closed that suddenly drivers were driving from different restaurants because those restaurants just weren't open anymore. So much has changed during the pandemic that it really is. It's really reorienting a lot of routes and people, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's ask Adam. Adam, you know, when did your restaurant start depending on deliveries and pickups, and how's that been going lately?
Well, so we actually, it's only been fairly recently. We only started using delivery in the last 6 or 9 months or so. And as soon as we hit mid-March, when DC started shutting down and we saw the restaurants close and shift over to pickup and delivery models, it was, I mean, immediately when we started depending on that revenue, although we actually pivoted pretty quickly away from delivery so that we could focus on kind of exactly what you were saying, Heather, is maintaining control over how our food went out. We found a lot of difficulty with some of these drivers showing up too early, too late, and that's not necessarily to speak ill about any of the drivers or even the apps necessarily. We just found that we couldn't maintain any sort of consistency with the product that we were putting out. And so we actually pivoted away from delivery entirely, which is then what caused us to start focusing on how we might be able to approach it differently with Togogo, with our own ordering platform.
Kate says to us on Facebook, I have never used food delivery apps, and I have to say it wasn't because I understood what a deep cut of the profits they are taking. It just seemed simpler to me to visit the restaurant and buy the food from them directly and tip the workers directly. I want you to weigh in on that, Adam. And also another tweet here from Bukard says, how many restaurants have switched to selling from their own website or a white label website after using Grubhub? How much cheaper is it? Adam?
Yeah, the first thing I'll say is definitely always order directly with your restaurant. If you have the capability, call the restaurant. The worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to tell you to order on their website or order through some other platform. But if you can order direct from the restaurant, that is far and away the most substantive way to support local businesses and support the restaurants and make sure the revenue stays within, you know, their ecosystem so that they can maintain control over their product and continue operating.
We're talking with Adam Fry, co-owner of Ivy and Coney and co-founder of Togogo. Also with us is Heather Haddon, food retail reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Heather, how are the companies that are behind these apps finding new ways to make money?
So that is a good question. This is a very expensive time for them to be running their business. In addition to needing to buy masks and gloves and other PPE for their drivers, companies like Grubhub have said that they have to provide more promotions, both for diners to get them to try their services and try to stick around with their services once they've tried it, and to provide more support for restaurants to advertise these services to keep them going. So it is a it's always been a very difficult business to make money, despite those really high commissions, the companies say. And I think it's even harder now. And, you know, a lot in the industry really predict this is going to fuel consolidation. And there's already some signs of it with talks between Uber and Grubhub.
Janelle emails, I have learned over the past few days that both DoorDash and Instacart are reducing the delivery pay to employees by the amount of tips over $2 that are placed on your card. Please, please, please tip your delivery people in cash. Heather, have you heard about that?
Tips have been a really fraught issue for a lot of these companies for a long time. DoorDash has gone back and forth on exactly how it allocates tips that people provide to customers through their app, and whether it goes directly to them or if it's pooled in a certain way and then they get a percentage of those apps. So this has been a fraught thing for these companies for a long time and something that workers have often been very unhappy about. You know, when you're mentioning organizing efforts, Instacart workers actually have been more successful than a lot of the food delivery, restaurant delivery app drivers in trying to organize. So before the pandemic, there was some efforts in Chicago here actually to have some of these workers organize for better treatment, for more judicious allocation of tips, according to them. So yeah, this is definitely a fraught issue. The companies say, you know, they're trying to do everything they can to get customers to tip more during this time. They put, you know, promotional little things on their apps to say, please tip your drivers right now. Mm-hmm. But again, this is another tension point between both sides.
El Pancho tweets a very similar thought, says, please talk about tipping. So many of our essential workers rely on tips to feed their kids and pay their rent. 20% is no longer enough. Heather, I'm also wondering, how have the subscription-based food delivery services like HelloFresh been affected by this?
So meal kits are actually doing really well right now. Meal kits, you know, Blue Apron, HelloFresh, et cetera, have had a really rocky ride since a lot of them were founded almost a decade ago. They saw an explosion of growth. A lot of investor money went into them. And then they kind of slumped. People just got kind of tired of all that food showing up at your door every day. Now, having food show up at your door every day is actually it's a good thing when people are trying to avoid the grocery stores. So this has given a new lease for a lot of these meal kit companies, and people are trying them again.
Mm-hmm. Have grocery stores seen any change, Heather?
In terms of meal kits?
Well, just, you know, more people having groceries delivered, or, you know, has that slowed down since the start of the pandemic?
Oh, yeah. So
because I know it was a mad rush at the beginning.
Stores,
yeah.
And on the delivery side. So, I mean, a lot of analysts we talked to say this is basically forced a whole, you know, 5 years of change in a couple of months. So, you know, big chains like Kroger had been recently, you know, striking deals with Instacart, investing in their own delivery services, and also really moving towards pickup. Like Adam mentioned, pickup is seen by a lot of restaurants and grocery stores as a more profitable means. So it's really worked to roll out these services, and now this is such a test for them. I mean, you talk to folks in New York, and the competition to try to get a grocery delivery slot is just fierce. I mean, people really see this as a much safer way to get their groceries, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. This has really been a time where a lot of people have tried this for their first time and decided that they want to do it for now.
Adam, I wonder if you can address this email here from Mike. Mike says, this is not a difficult problem. You and I just have to be willing to pay a fair wage to have a team of people prepare our meals and bring them to our door. As expensive as it may seem, the real cost of restaurant food has always been suppressed. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think Mike hits the nail on the head there. Already there's pushback, but sort of a socially accepted norm of when you go to a restaurant, you are certainly paying some sort of premium, and that comes with the dining experience and having someone serve you and bring your food to you and take it away. It only follows that that will be at least somewhat more expensive by the nature of someone bringing that food to you, to your door. And I think to speak again to the transparency issue that you were just talking about, that's certainly an issue. I think Heather mentioned that it's complicated because there's a lot of uncertainty as to where those fees go, which again kind of formulated in our minds as why we wanted to try to start our own platform, so that we could present a more transparent option, so that it was clear that, yeah, the delivery fee goes to the person delivering the food. That's part of giving them a livable wage.
Mm-hmm. Your restaurant, Ivy and Coney, we mentioned earlier, Adam, is in the Shaw neighborhood of Washington, D.C. What do things look like right now on your block? Are most restaurants closed, or what's happening?
It's a little bit of a mix of both. There are a couple of places that have closed their doors. There are plenty that are still open in our neighborhood that have pivoted as well as we have to a solely pickup and sometimes delivery model, a lot of whom have not done this before. And so it's a lot of people kind of working together to find our ground in terms of what new restaurants look like, what restaurants look like in the new world.
Heather, are these apps making as much money as we think right now? Bottom line.
It appears no. So DoorDash and Postmates are private. There's a lot that we don't really know about their business models. But from what we know, going into the pandemic, they weren't making money, and this business has become even more expensive now. Again, because of all the materials they need to buy. You know, Grubhub is trying to provide some assistance, they say, to, you know, the restaurants, and all the other apps have also said that they have tried to help independent restaurants because they really have come under criticism because of the commissions. And then on top of that, we have these fee caps that are coming into place in a lot of cities now, Seattle, New York, San Francisco, where they are capping the fees that the commissions can charge, particularly independent restaurants, to around 10 to 15% from, you know, typically they would charge, say, 25%. So the apps say that they're making less money because of that, and their Grubhub and Uber Eats has both said that they have to pass along these additional fees to customers, which, you know, customers already feel like it's very expensive. It can be very expensive to get food delivery, and this is not going to be good for their business models long term.
Another note here, you know, a reminder, we did reach out to Grubhub, DoorDash, Postmates, also Uber Eats to join today's conversation. They each declined. Now, I want to read here another tweet here from Francis, who's a local delivery driver. He says, things are going pretty good right now. I know there's a lot of talk about some cities limiting the cut these apps take, but for me, they pay me well and they pay me directly. I think more attention should go to whether states and cities should require a minimum wage for delivery drivers. Heather, your response to that?
Yeah, that is something that I haven't really heard come up. I think the cities right now are very focused on these commission caps as a way that they can try to start imposing some kind of regulation on these apps. Even before the pandemic, New York City was actually talking about imposing these commission caps because, you know, a lot of small businesses really are feeling the pinch from these commissions. And again, the small mom and pop restaurants aren't able to negotiate as favorable commission rates as a big chain. So they are also getting, you know, having to pay more than a big chain for these services. So I think cities, from what I can see so far, really taking this approach. I haven't heard as much about a minimum wage.
Adam, can you weigh in on that? These fees, and Heather talked earlier when we asked about, you know, the companies behind these apps and new ways that they're finding to make money. There's these additional fees. How is that working out for you? Is that something you've experienced?
Well, like I said, we pivoted away from partnering with third-party delivery apps pretty quickly. So we haven't really been impacted on a restaurant standpoint from some of these legislations. That said, I think that it's always important to consider livable wages for all people involved in that process, right? If you're a driver, there's no reason why you should not be benefiting from the same sort of wages that anyone else in the industry would be getting.
Rodney emails us, for decades, food delivery has been the niche of teenagers and college students looking for extra money. I'm curious to know if the agreements with Grubhub and DoorDash actually pay a living wage and cover the cost of a vehicle and car insurance. Heather?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would depend very much where you're driving, how much business you're doing, and how far you have to drive. You know, when you talk to drivers, it really can vary how much mileage they're having to put on their cars. You know, again, if they're driving as opposed to taking a bike or a scooter or walking, it really can depend, you know, how far they're having to drive. And as these apps have expanded across the country, they are more and more, you know, they're not just in New York, Washington, San Francisco anymore. They're in all kinds of cities and all kinds of markets. You know, they all serve most of the country, basically. So if you're an app driver for one of these for one of these services, it really could vary how much business you're actually getting, depending where you are and how much demand there is.
Yeah, and it's important to note, you know, Rodney makes another point that food delivery has not always just been for teens. You know, this is now a fast food situation where the stereotype is that it's all low experienced workers, but plenty of adults are doing this thing too. So that's important to get across. Now, Heather Haddon is a food retail reporter for the Wall Street Journal and co-owner of Ivy and Coney and co-founder of Togogo. Adam Fry is with us as well. Next, we're going to talk more about the fact that perhaps there is another way. And if you're living somewhere that's coming up with a fairer solution, we would love to hear from you. More from our guests and from you in just a moment. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. This is 1A. Now we're discussing the challenges of delivering food for many local restaurants during this pandemic with Heather Haddon. She's a food retail reporter for the Wall Street Journal and the co-owner of Ivy & Coney and co-founder of Togogo, Adam Fry. Adam, let's find out more about that. Catherine emailed us. She says, I'd love to hear specifically how Togogo works. How do they figure out restaurant commissions and tips or pay for workers? And how does their model differ aside from being local?
Being local is probably the biggest platform on which we differ. By being local, we kind of approached it as restaurateurs, number one. We own and operate a restaurant. We live and operate in a community with a lot of other great small businesses. And so our primary goal has always been to support those businesses. The other difference is, or rather the largest, is transparency. We operate with lower commissions in large part because we want to be able to support these restaurants, and we know the only way to do that is by taking less money from them, by maintaining as much of the revenue within each business. And so it's pretty easy by our model to just take less money, right? If we are not trying to
profit
or anything like this.
You mean for the drivers?
No, for us ourselves. So the drivers, we're committing to making sure that everyone gets a livable wage. The delivery fees that get charged to the customer will go to those drivers to make sure that those drivers are getting a livable wage. And additionally, the tips will go to the drivers as well. And that, and through no middleman.
Fred tweets us as well. Fred says, we have at least one local restaurant that is foregoing food delivery services and employing their own servers who no longer are waiting tables to make deliveries. They are paid a fair wage, get their tips, and lose nothing to the delivery services charges. Your thoughts on that, Adam?
I think that's a great plan. That's part of what drove our inception of how we want to approach delivery. One of the things that we offer, which I guess is another difference between us and some of the other larger platforms, is we offer a driver management system which allows restaurants to effectively hire back employees if they're able to, or create their own fleet of drivers and kind of optimize those routes, make sure that the delivery schedules are optimized, and just provide a logistics platform for restaurants to do exactly that.
Now, how much commission delivery companies are taking from restaurants is a concern for many in the business, including Spencer, a delivery driver from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Here's what he left us in our voicemail box.
I've been a driver for one of these ride services for a while now, and a few weeks ago I switched to exclusively to food delivery, and you know, I don't feel like I'm putting myself in a ton of risk, and personally I'm doing great financially, but I do worry about these restaurants when I learn how much of a cut these services are taking from them. I worry it's not sustainable, but again, for now, everything's okay for me, but for everybody else, you know, I worry.
Thanks for your message, Spencer. Adam, did Spencer's comment resonate with you?
Yeah, entirely. I mean, it's been coming to light a lot more recently about how aggressive some of these commissions are, which, again, drove our approach, which was just, you know, if we charge less, then restaurants get to keep more. And if we can do this operation by charging less, then there is no reason why we ought not to be charging less. You know, I think that we appreciate the concern from drivers like Spencer and from customers who worry about those commissions. And it, you know, it becomes unsustainable, especially as we've pivoted to an almost entirely delivery and sometimes pickup model.
One listener who'd rather remain anonymous left us this message. I'm an employee driver for Grubhub. The biggest challenge has been trying to stay busy for an 8-hour shift. Business seems to be down for employee drivers, but not for the contract drivers, which are also known as 1099 workers. I am sure Grubhub is giving the better orders to the 1099 drivers, and the employee drivers are stuck with the orders with zero tip. Heather, why would that be?
Yeah, no, that brings up a good point, that there are various structures for how the companies actually employ these drivers. And there's also different ways that the apps work with the restaurants. Grubhub actually was originally founded for restaurants that did their own delivery, and it was an online platform for them. They didn't actually have drivers, unlike mm-hmm. DoorDash and Postmates, which were founded as gig services to begin with, which provided delivery of food.
Oh, okay.
And because Grubhub has had to pivot more to this delivery model, it's really it's a lot less profitable for them to do this. It's much cheaper for them to just be an online platform of food, which you can order, than to actually do the delivery yourselves, because it is very expensive to do that. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of questions that the pandemic has brought again to the surface about how the structure of these apps actually work, who gets which orders, how restaurants are prioritized, who gets what fees. And I think it's, you know, it's right to raise questions about them.
Now, Adam, thinking of Tagogo, can you just break down the numbers for us? What does a normal transaction look like?
Sure. So a normal transaction looks like whatever, you know, someone goes on and places an order and they've got their subtotal. And
so let's say we have an order of $35.
Sure. So if you've got an order of $35, the commission that we end up taking from the restaurant is going to depend on how that order is being delivered. So if it's being picked up, then we are going to take up to 5%. And I say up to only because as we're launching, we're offering it at 0%. So right now we're not taking anything from those. Mm-hmm. If you are using our driver management software and optimizing your own fleet, then we are going to take 10%. And once we are able to launch with our own fleet of drivers, if you're using that, we are taking 15%. And then on top of any of that, so this is where the delivery fees come in. There's obviously no delivery fee for pickup. And then the delivery fees for either a restaurant using their own fleet or using our couriers, the delivery fee goes to the restaurant if they're using their own fleet, or to us if you're using our fleet. And that money is used to pay for the drivers, as well as any tip that you leave on top of that.
Now, just even thinking of that same average order of $35, you know, we've heard feedback about, you know, Grubhub, you know, restaurants only receiving $25 of that, for instance, before any commission is then taken out, and Grubhub applying their commission on the total. A reminder that we did reach out to Grubhub, DoorDash as well, Postmates, and Uber Eats to join today's conversation. They each declined. But Heather, I'm wondering, how have these companies responded to this kind of feedback about how much money they're getting?
Yeah, it has really put them on the defensive.
Yeah.
Again, this was happening before the pandemic. There was, you know, New York City and some other cities have had hearings on this where executives have had to testify about how their commissions work and whether they're fair or not. And now it's even more so. And I think all the companies have pledged to do various things for the restaurants and for their drivers to try to show that they care. Grubhub is saying that they're basically taking all their profits this quarter and putting it into driver, restaurant, and diner services. They are basically going to make no money. And so they've said they are trying to do what they can. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is just not a easy model to make work. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, you see a lot of upstarts and also restaurant-led initiatives like what Adam is doing to try to gain some of this business back for themselves, to try to bring restaurants directly to their platforms or some more regional kind of initiatives to try to make it more profitable, because it really has become so expensive for everyone involved.
Heather Haddon is a food retail reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Also with us is Adam Fry, co-owner of Ivy & Coney and co-founder of Tagogo. Now, I want to get back to this basic moral question here. Is it better to order delivery and keep restaurants in business, or do we not? And maybe, you know, keep more workers safe. Adam, how are you keeping your workers safe?
Initially, we were part of the unfortunate large pack who had to immediately lay off all of our staff. And so it was one of my business partners and I who were doing everything in-house. And, you know, we've taken great lengths to follow all of the CDC guidelines. And as we've moved to a pickup model, we're making sure that anyone who's around is in gloves, is wearing masks, we've been fortunate enough to recently be able to hire back a couple of employees who are furthermore following those guidelines as well. I think that the most important thing is if you are operating and if you are providing service is to follow those guidelines as best as you can to make sure that you have as much protective equipment available for any of the staff, because I think that the number one concern should be the health and safety of staff and customers.
Candace tweets, "We connect with the restaurants because they are known members of our community. So we order directly from them and we pick up our orders. We want them to be there over the long haul." Is that kind of community support happening for you as well, Adam?
Yeah, certainly. We've seen not only an initial huge kind of pour over of support from all of our great regulars and from the community at large, but it's been sustained as well. It's been great to see our community as well as other communities with other restaurants just sort of learn to navigate how to engage with their customers, how to keep kind of providing any services. You know, restaurants play a much more pivotal role than merely providing food. A lot of them provide places for people to meet and places for people to have fun and play trivia and things like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, that support from the community has been integral. And I think that everyone's seen a huge uptick in the way that manifests.
From community support to government support, I know you touched on some of these earlier, Heather, but just remind us, what kind of support have local restaurants been receiving from their local government?
Well, a lot of restaurants have, on the federal level, applied for this PPP, Paycheck Protection Program. It's right. had a real mixed response as to how helpful it is actually for independent restaurants because of some of the terms and how it's laid out. There's some discussion on the federal level that they may change the program to try to make it more helpful, particularly for small businesses, small independent restaurants who have been hurt so much. Locally, you know, restaurants are all trying to get abatements and deferrals on their rent because a lot of them are closed and doing no business right now and looking for some support there. They've asked for their suppliers for more beneficial terms. And then, you know, a lot of cities, again, have stepped up and tried to reduce these commissions on the actual the fees that the delivery companies are charging. I think one question, though, going forward is if they're actually losing business because of this. So Grubhub said after San Francisco imposed its fee cap that independent businesses lost about 10% of their volume of orders because they had to raise prices and then people didn't want to use food delivery because of that. So, good intentions. We'll see what it means for actual order volume going forward.
Mark emails us. Speaking of going forward, he says, "Mark my word, drones are next." Is there any truth to that? I want to know from both of you, you know, when we reach the other side of this pandemic, how do you think the food delivery industry is going to look? I'll start with you, Heather.
That's interesting on drones. There has been some research about trying to do food delivery through drones. It seems like some of that has been tested in Australia. It really hasn't come to the U.S. very much. There has been also some tests with robots, having robots do delivery, and also automated vehicles. There's some automated vehicle companies, one called Nuro, which has been tested by Domino's and actually by Kroger to try to do delivery orders and try to cut down the costs. I think anything, you know, these companies are looking long term. How do we reduce these costs to make this more sustainable and more profitable model for everyone? I don't think food delivery is going to go away by any means. I think, you know, customers like it. And, you know, when it works for a restaurant, it can be valuable. Mm-hmm. But clearly the economics need to change to make it work.
For sure. Adam, what do you think on the other side of this pandemic?
I'm a little bit old school and analog, and so I will always prefer an in-person encounter for any sort of dining experience. But, you know, from a standpoint of delivery, I think that it's undeniable that that is going to be a much larger stream of revenue for restaurants moving forward. And so I think that anything we can do just to simplify that, to make that a little bit more within the restaurant's control so that they're still offering good dining experiences, is the best thing that we can do.
Excellent. Also, very quick before we go, Adam, I got to ask, how's Tagogo doing? Success?
It's still very early. It's been successful so far, and we're hoping that a lot of people are going to appreciate the local support and continue the community support that we've been seeing through our restaurant as well, and help us kind of provide a little bit of a lifeline to the restaurants around here.
Adam Fry is the co-owner of Ivy and Coney and co-founder of food delivery platform Tagogo. Heather Haddon is a food retail reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to you both. Now, before we go, our daily act of kindness. Today's story comes from Mark in Roanoke, Virginia.
I heard an accident outside of my house, and some of the neighbors and I went out. A young pizza delivery woman had been hit by a car and knocked her car through the intersection. While we were out there, it was a hit and run. Another woman came back, gave her the license number of the car, and then one of my neighbors volunteered to take her pizza to the address that she was supposed to deliver to. So all in all, she was a bit shaken up, but it all ended up fine.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing your story, Mark. If you have an act of kindness to share, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. Today's producer was Emmanuel Johnson. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.